Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. It is over. The President's Cup of 2024 belongs, as it has every time since 1998, to the United States of America. The final score, 18.5 to 11.5. Rex, what had been tight on Thursday afternoon and Saturday afternoon, ended up in what is actually the biggest defeat at home in the history of this competition. What was your reaction in Sunday singles and all that played out at the President's Cup?
I know you're going to unpack this, and I'm interested to read what you're going to write on NBCSports.com/golf, because this is a conversation that needs to be had, because we're sort of at the tipping point, I believe, at this event where there is no parity. And as best as Mike Weir can do, as best as Ernie Els can do, as best as Nick Price and Trevor Immelman and all of the captains that came before them, there is a talent gap between these two teams, despite what the world rankings say. If you look at the world rankings, the split's about the same between the U.S. team and the international team as it is with the U.S. team and the European team at the Ryder Cup. But there is something more to this. I think it has to do with depth. And actually, I know you're going to take it down a different road, but there are changes that the PGA Tour could make that, in theory, should make this better, primarily reducing the number of points that are available. And I think we can get into that as well. And actually, our colleague Nota Begay had a really good idea. I was walking with him in one of those final groups this afternoon. We got to talking about it. I think the other half of it is give the international team a full amount of flexibility. And by that, I mean give the captain as many picks as he wants. If he wants one, give him one. If he wants 12, give him 12, whatever the case may be. I think we're also at the point where if you want this to be a legitimate event, and I think after all of this time, we can start saying it's not a legitimate event because it simply is not close. We had South Korea, which was a bit of a one-off, 2019, and Australia was roughly close coming down the stretch. You make an argument for 45 minutes in Charlotte last time around. But I think once you kind of look at the bottom line, I mean, if you just do the Wikipedia search, it's simply not close and something has to change.
13-1-1 is now the American spread in this President's Cup. And you're right, I will unpack this in further detail on NBCSports.com/golf, but writing that piece for Monday. It's not a competition anymore. It's not a rivalry. It has essentially become procedural in the sense that the exact same thing happens every single time, where they have a lot of inspiration, certainly a lot of motivation. They talk a good game heading into the week. They talk about how this they've never been gotten closer, that they're making strides. If you look at in the past, whether it was 2015, final match in the golf course, 2019, heading into singles, like, look, they're clearly making progress. Progress is not good enough at this point. And I asked Ernie Els, I asked Trevor Immelman, I asked Mike Weir, you know, the last significant tweak and change to this tournament format was back in 2015. That was when they dropped the number of available points from 34 to 30. You saw what happened in Korea. It was a much closer competition. It is clearly time for more tweaks. They said there was not any sort of internal push to reduce the number of points from 30 to 28, which would help mimic the Ryder Cup. But there has to be, Rex. And you don't want handouts. You don't want sort of special treatment for the internationals. Those are 12 of the best players in the world. There's clearly a sense of personal pride in which they're teeing it up in the President's Cup. They don't want it to be made easier. However, for the sake of the PGA Tour, and this is supposed to be an entertainment product, and now that you have this, the folks from Strategic Sports Group who are pumping more than $1 billion into the product, they want a return on this. This is not a good enough product to sell to the marketplace moving forward.
I thought it was very interesting. And look, this is an internal dynamic and most people aren't going to pick up on it. But when you asked the captain and the vice captains that question, Mike Weir took a very diplomatic answer. And I think that's what most captains have done. You probably weren't paying attention. I was on the other side of the room. Ernie Els, who was one of his assistant captains this week, he immediately leaned into the mic and turned it on as soon as you asked the question. He wanted to get into the fight on that one. And he's the one that immediately came in right after Mike Weir and pointed out, you're right. Maybe internally Mike Weir isn't going to push the tour to change the format, because I don't know if that's in Mike Weir's nature to do something like that. I will tell you, the other assistant captains are all for it. Certainly Trevor Immelman went to the mat trying to change it. I had numerous conversations with Nick Price. Ernie Els was leading the charge. And I think you and I have talked about the idea that just reduce it to 28. We can all agree the Ryder Cup is by far the best event in sports, maybe one of the best events in all of sports. However, there's a reason why, and it's because you have parity, and every year you show up and you don't know who's going to win, and the United States team is trying and grinding away. That's 28 points. I think either that's the magic number or something thereabouts, because what you end up with in this situation that we're in right now, the international team is top heavy. You had Adam Scott perform pretty well this week. You had Hideki Matsuyama perform pretty well this week. But as you got towards the bottom, you simply didn't have the performances you needed.
And it's just so confusing why the PGA Tour would not want to make this tweak. We've heard for years that, oh, they're incentivized to have the U.S. continue to win this thing. This is not a good enough product if the U.S. continues to win this thing. Like, the PGA Tour is owning and operating and under the purview of both of these teams. Like, they should want this to be as competitive as possible. That is the easiest thing to do. I'm with you, giving more flexibility with the captain's picks. Obviously, in 2 years' time, who knows what the landscape of golf is going to look like, or the live players could potentially be reintegrated. But like, you look at the short-term future, Rex, like, this thing's pretty bleak. 2026, we're going to Medina. It is rarely, if ever, been close in the President's Cup on American soil. You would expect the U.S. team to continue to be a complete force. 2028, at Kingston Heath in Australia. Maybe Adam Scott is like a playing captain at that time. He'll be 48 years old by that point. Again, I think if you're an international President's Cup supporter, you hope by that point the landscape has shifted. You hope that some of the best and brightest from other parts in the world are going to be coming in sort of reintegrated back into the international team room. But absent of that, Rex, I mean, there has to be significant changes, because 13-1-1 is doing a disservice to what should be. And again, like, we had fun this week. We thought it was interesting. We've thoroughly enjoyed breaking this down, but it just feels like a formality of what's going to happen when you go to the President's Cup. And that's not good for anyone involved. I think it could lead to complacency for the Americans. I think it leads to potentially disinterest for the Americans. And it leads to sort of the same, I don't even know what the word would be. It's just like a begrudging of acceptance among the internationals of this is just how it's going to be, and this sort of stinks.
What was the most fun you did? Like, what's the most fun thing you did this week? You said we had fun.
I think the podcast is the most fun thing we do, because, and look, team events are different. You listen, you talk to the players all week. Like, they thoroughly enjoy doing this. I think it does, at least golf becomes sort of the rare sport, kind of like others, like football or basketball or baseball, whatever you guys are into, where you can actually have meaningful debate and dissect coaches' decisions, captains' decisions in this respect, player performances, if a partner's letting them down. Like, I think all of those are interesting facets. You would just love to see a more competitive result at the end. We just haven't had it in a very long time.
And I'm going to kind of take a deep dive tonight on Adam Scott. You brought him up. I don't know if he's going to be the captain the next time around. But it's hard for me to wrap my mind around, yes, he's playing well right now. And yes, he said in the interview, he'd love to play in more of these. You don't know what the future has in store. The game's getting younger and younger. I kind of want to unpack. It's a really complicated legacy, because you have to ask yourself, after all the things you and I have just said, why do you want to do this anymore? Why do you want to bang your head against the wall? It's not a good legacy, if I'm being quite honest. And yet he wants to come back year after year. And I just want to sort of touch on the one thing that you brought up, and I think we mentioned it earlier in the week. Of both the teams, and I'm talking about the U.S. Ryder Cup and President's Cup team, the European Ryder Cup team, and the International President's Cup team. Of all three of those teams, I would say the International President's Cup team took LIV Golf, whatever LIV Golf is, the hardest. And by that, I mean, go back to Korea. And we've talked about this before. That's as close as it's been in the modern era. It was a one-point victory for the United States. It came down to the last match, the last hole. It was very exciting. Of those players, the 12 international players in South Korea, six went to LIV Golf. Of those six, they produced 13 of the 14.5 points that team won that week. Clearly, LIV Golf gutted what was going to be a solid international team. And essentially, Trevor Immelman had to start rebuilding from scratch weeks before Charlotte last year. And look, you're going to argue that the U.S. team also lost Brooks and Bryson and DJ. And that's absolutely true. The U.S. is deeper. It was easier for them to backfill and to sort of let the next man up come up and do this. If there is a universe where you can somehow get the two sides together, and this is a whole different conversation, imagine the team that you could field, getting those six players back, some version of them, and Joaquin Niemann wasn't even on that team in Korea. He was by far going to be an up-and-coming talent for that side. I think that could make a difference.
Yeah, 2022, I think, would have been entirely different had those players not defected to Liv and decimated Trevor Immelman's squad. Same goes this year. If you look at the Liv point standings, the players who would have been on this team, who knows, they potentially could have given a better effort, a better end result than what eventually became a 7-point margin of victory. Rex, tonight for NBCSports.com, you said you're writing about Adam Scott. I'm writing, however, about Keegan Bradley, who was a controversial, at least in my mind, captain's pick for this President's Cup, was recently named the U.S. Ryder Cup captain, had been named an assistant captain for these matches at Royal Montreal. The victory as the last man into the BMW Championship field changed everything. And I thought he acquitted himself quite well. But I think it's a pretty touching story, the Keegan Bradley journey that he's been on over the past 52 weeks, being snubbed from the Ryder Cup team, that certainly over the past month, sort of the whirlwind of going from assistant to then a player. But I think it also stands in stark contrast to the narrative that emerged from Rome, where there was U.S. team dissension. There was all the talk about we need to be playing for pay. Was there friction? How much did that factor in what became yet another loss on European soil? Keegan Bradley is as earnest as they come. 38 years old. He said he'd taken for granted what it meant to be inside the U.S. team room. I think having his presence on Team USA this year was hugely important. And then he backed it up, Rex, with some pretty fantastic play, a 2-1 record with Wyndham Clark as one of his partners, and then won his singles match on the 18th hole against Siwoo Kim, the best player for the international team this week at Royal Montreal to secure the winning point for the Americans. I think if you are a U.S. Ryder Cup fan and you see the way Keegan Bradley performed this week, you see the sort of energy that was infused back into Team USA, the good-hearted nature, the cohesion that he sort of fostered, I think you have to feel really good about the direction this team's headed.
Yeah, who's had a better summer than Keegan Bradley, or late summer, I guess I should say, winning, getting the Ryder Cup captaincy, becoming a vice captain, then not becoming a vice captain because he got a spot on the team. It's been a pretty good summer for him. Yeah, it's interesting, and look, he didn't want to get into this too much. Obviously, he's in the heat of the moment this particular week, but I was thinking about writing tomorrow. You and I both have very, very early flights out of here, but I did want to do a follow-up on Monday, and the idea being, what lessons, if any, can the U.S. team take away from what they did this week at Royal Montreal and try to transplant that into Bethpage next year? And we always have this conversation, and it never seems to translate very well. I do think this time around, there is a modicum of solace that the U.S. team can take, because this was on the contentious side, at least when it comes to the President's Cup. And, I mean, that's what it's going to be next year at Bethpage. It's going to be rowdy. It's going to be nasty. I hope there's not going to be a fight in the parking lot, but you apparently know when it comes to the Ryder Cup. So I think everything that Keegan saw this week, and I want to believe that he spent a good amount of time trying to prepare, trying to play, and as you pointed out, play well, but also maybe glaring out of the other side of his eye and watching Jim Furyk and watching the assistant captains and seeing how everything works, because he's going to have to apply whatever worked this week for the team. And you have to give Jim Furyk a monsoon of credit. He did some things that you and I both were kind of like, that's new. I didn't see Scotty Scheffler with Russell Henley. Turned out that was a really good pairing. I didn't see some of the other things that he did in the lineup. I didn't see Keegan Bradley even being in that lineup. I didn't know that Max Homa should have been on this team. But everything seemed to coalesce into not just a victory, but a commanding victory. And I think you can take some sort of momentum 12 months from now.
Yeah, this was talking to some players afterward. They thought that this was the best captaincy that they had been a part of. They were a big fan of the accountability that Jim Furyk was fostering. They were a big fan of the transparency. They knew exactly who they were going to be playing with in most cases weeks ahead of time. There were no surprises. I understand that COVID and some of the flu-like symptoms that were sort of permeating the U.S. team room in Rome sort of threw things a little bit for a loop at the last minute last year at the Ryder Cup. This was an entirely different situation. They were all prepared. They were all ready. They all understood the assignment. And I think that made it a little bit easier. There was also some nice touches, Keegan Bradley said, in the U.S. Team room that made it feel homey. I think the biggest thing, Rex, is him mentioning that there are misconceptions about the U.S. team room and the friction, and also the differences, the lack of ego that was not probably apparent in that American team room a decade ago, a team where every other player was basically in the shadow of a Tiger Woods or a Phil Mickelson. The leaders of this team are Xander Schauffele and Scottie Scheffler. They're leaders by example on the golf course. There doesn't need to be.
Well, Xander likes to talk. Like, Xander does it on the golf course and off the golf course as well.
But so I think that's a perfect combination of what those players bring, which is world-class talent, to an earnestness, a thankfulness, an appreciation, I think a general wish and desire to be authentic and to be a part of something bigger than yourself that Keegan Bradley brings. I think next year that U.S. Ryder Cup team will be insanely strong from a chemistry standpoint. I think it obviously remains to be seen who will actually be a part of it.
And look, the bits and pieces are going to evolve. It's not going to be the same 12 players. It never is from year to year. But there is a really good foundation. And that's ignoring the idea that Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth won't be in the mix. I mean, keep in mind that he also has some other options that could emerge next year and join that team. So, yes, I really like what Keegan Bradley was able to do this week, not just as a player, but you have to believe after being removed from this for a decade, being back in the team room just gives him a reintroduction that he normally would not have. He would have gone into next year's event having been more than a decade removed from his last cup match, team room. I think that's huge.
And I think there's always, like, we always look at these team rooms and be like, oh, man, this is the best U.S. team ever. We're definitely going to see this again next year at Bethpage. And it inevitably, it's probably 8 or 9 of the same core. And then you sort of have some different pieces that'll come in here or there. But I thought what happened this week is a good indication of why this sort of group is different. You look at Russell Henley, 35 years old. He's been on the PGA Tour for a dozen years. He was integrated seamlessly into that U.S. team room, despite not really being all that close friends with anyone on the team. He's probably closest friends with his former teammate at Georgia in Kevin Kisner, yes, who was obviously alongside him for each and every match. But like putting him with the world number one Scottie Scheffler, that could have been a very intimidating situation for Russell Henley to be in. Instead, I think it speaks to the character and the acceptance and the openness of Scottie Scheffler that they formed a very formidable pairing. Xander Schauffele is the same way. Kyle Morikawa sort of acquitting Sahith Theegala in a team match quite nicely, going 1-1 as a pair as well. Like, that is what this group can do. And so even if you do have some players who float in and out, if Brian Harman doesn't make the Ryder Cup team next year, if Max Homa continues to be in a little bit of a slump, if Tony Finau sort of ages out of that group, you're still going to bring in players, whether it's a Jordan Spieth who returns to form after injury, or a Will Zalatoris, or a Nick Dunlap, or a Billy Horschel, who are still a part of this core and can still be made part of a larger group pretty seamlessly without sort of having that friction or divide that's been so apparent over the decades.
Well, and there's two things that stand out when you want to get into specifics about what I felt like Jim Furyk did really, really well. The first and foremost is he managed whatever conflicts, either real or perceived from the outside, that may have been there. And I'll go immediately to Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay. And we all know what happened last year in Rome, Hatgate, whatever may or may not have been true. But those two are very, very good friends. Those two play together. They haven't played together particularly well in recent history. And I think what Jim was able to do seamlessly without angering either one of them, without getting full buy-in from both of them, was splitting them up, getting production from both sides of them, and then putting them back together when it was appropriate. And I think that's a sign of a really good captain. The other half of it is he talked, and I think this is probably going to be one of the primary lessons Keegan takes away from this, about being prepared beforehand. Because once the teams get named, once you make those captain's picks, I think Jim said it was 21 days. And there's a lot of things that need to happen in 21 days. And for him to say that he already had a really good idea on his pairings, he already had a really good blueprint of what he wanted to do, even before he made his captain's picks. He'd already run it through his vice captains. He'd run the analytics. He talked to the certain players. He made sure he was all right. I don't think preparation can be overlooked. You look at what Luke Donald did so well last year in Rome. It's clearly, if you can get in early and you can make sure that there's nothing left to chance, and I think I reported this earlier in the week, the message in the U.S. team room this week was no surprises. We don't want to be surprised by anything, not pairings, not results, none of it. We want to know exactly what's going to happen, and clearly Jim did that this week.
And just to put a fine point on this, I was pretty struck with Keegan Bradley saying afterward he thought it'd be virtually impossible for him to be a playing captain next year, just seeing all that went on with Jim Furyk and his backroom staff this week. Keegan Bradley is still a hell of a player. He really is. He's top 20 in the world for a reason. He said unless he makes the team on points, he will not be a playing part of that U.S. Ryder Cup team. He is determined as anything he has been in his entire life, to win back the cup for the U.S. next year at Bethpage. Rex, let's transition a little bit to the player side of this. Let's talk standouts and disappointments. We'll go positive first from a player standpoint.
Are we doing great?
We're not going one by one. You can go to NBCSports.com/golf for report cards from the 24 players at this President's Cup. I guess just top of mind, which players and which performances stood out to you this week?
I mean, we've already talked about Scottie Scheffler. I mean, look, he was the world number one. He's the alpha in that team. We already talked about Xander Schauffele. He was the team leader both on and off the golf course. And I think it's fun to watch him evolve this season into a really elite player. He was always a really, really good player, but he evolved into an elite player, a star player this year, winning the two major championships. He has a different air about him. What he did this week, I think, speaks volumes. But I think just from a pure performance standpoint, it's Colin Morikawa. Like, this is the Colin Morikawa that we love. I don't know how many times I sat in my chair in the media center and just watched the shot tracker do exactly what we know he wants the golf ball to do. That's start a little left and fall to the right without question. Like, it is a machine watching him when he's on this. And you get full credit. He went back with his swing coach, Rick Sussinghouse, after splitting up for a little while. I think there's a comfort level. I think they reunited. I was watching on the 17th green when they finished up. There was a really, really big hug there. I think there was a sense of accomplishment getting through this week. He impressed me a lot.
I'm totally in agreement with you. It seems like a minor miracle that he did not win a golf tournament in 2024. He was in the final group of two major championships. He's a more complete, well-rounded player now than when he won a major in 2021 in 2020 at the PGA Championship, which was sort of obscured by COVID, but he's so precise and he's so accurate. One of the best drivers of the golf ball. He may no longer be at sort of that Scottie Scheffler type excellence level with his irons, but he is such a better putter and chipper and pitcher of the golf ball than he was earlier in his career. The arrow continues to point straight up for Kyle Morikawa, who has crashed back inside the top five in the world ranking. To me, I actually predicted this on Wednesday. Got to toot my own horn because I rarely get the opportunity to brag. Russell Henley, to me, was a revelation in this President's Cup. From a ball striking standpoint, it's just so crisp. You know exactly where it's going. He hits shots with virtually no curve whatsoever. And I think, and this was mentioned a couple of times, first by Adam Scott and then by Scottie Scheffler, putting yourself in this cauldron can be such a boon for a player's career. And we've seen it countless times. Scottie Scheffler actually probably being the best example in 2021, got the sort of belief of his peers that they wanted him on that Ryder Cup team in 2021, performed well that week at Whistling Straits, beat John Rahm in singles, and then ever since he has been a man on fire. It may be perhaps unrealistic to expect a similar meteoric rise in trajectory for Russell Henley, who at this point is kind of a known quantity in his career. But he's coming off a year in which he performed the best he ever has in a major championships, back-to-back top tens in the U.S. Open and the Open Championship. Don't be surprised if Russell Henley next year in 2025 picks off a major championship, seriously contends in one, just sort of given the experience that he enjoyed this week. How about on the international side, Rex? Anybody on the international side that you thought really stood out?
We said it earlier in the week. And for them to have any chance this week, they needed their stars to show up and show up in a big way. And by that, I meant Adam Scott and Hideki Matsuyama and Tom Kim and Siwoo Kim. They needed to get a lot of production out of those players. They did to a certain degree. I guess I don't want to give out grades, but all of them get B's, B pluses, somewhere around in there. Because certainly they performed better than they had in the past, just not good enough to get by the U.S. team. But I guess if there's one player that stood out, and look, I'm going to be the one that's probably going to be most critical when it comes to Tom Kim, simply because for this event to evolve, a lot of things need to happen. We touched on them earlier in the podcast on the idea that there need to be changes. There needs to be parity. Without it, it's not going to be the event that we all know it can grow into. It's not going to ever rival the Ryder Cup. The other half of that is you need an antagonist, and there is no better antagonist right now than Tom Kim. Whether he wants to embrace that or not. My only problem with it is you kind of have to back it up. And as my colleague Nota Begay pointed out earlier this week, on live from, he has a losing record in this match. So if you look at the great antagonists that make the Ryder Cup special, Ian Poulter, Patrick Reed, Sebi Ballesteros, keep going down the list, they all had winning records. So I think Tom Kim is still very, very young. This is the second time he's played in this event, but he is such a spark plug. And if he can find a way to continue to connect the dots, I think he could be really, really special for the international team.
Yeah, I think if you're a captain, you'd love to have 12 Tom Kims on your roster. Young, feisty, great putters. But again, you have to back it up. And we sort of dogged on him on the podcast on Saturday night, mildly, if not moderately, whining at some of the players he claimed had cussed him out afterward. Tom Kim was clearly subdued, I thought, during his singles match against Sam Burns, which resulted in a tie. He even went up to Xander Schauffele and Jim Furyk afterward to apologize, saying he didn't mean any ill harm with his words. It was basically just voicing some of his frustration in the aftermath of what was yet another 3-1 session win for the Americans. 2-3 at Quail Hollow, 1-2-1 here at Royal Montreal. I'm with you that Tom Kim is probably the blueprint for this international team. It's probably going to land a little bit hollow if he does not pick it up performance-wise. How about disappointments, Rex? Let's start with the Americans, which is probably a little bit harder to do.
Well, Brian Harman clearly did not have a very, very good week. He wasn't himself on the green, so I think statistically that bears itself out. I think if he was sitting here, he'd admit to that. And I'm sure that's disappointing to him. I'll go back to Max Homa, and look, I don't think there's many people who were more outspoken when it came to I did not believe he was a very good pick for this particular event, simply because of what he has done this year. If you look at his body of work and you just break it down analytically, the one thing he needed to do well on this golf course, drive the ball, he had not done well this season. And you're going to point to the fact, well, he got a Sunday victory. Well, it was in darkness. I mean, the cup had been clinched nearly an hour before that, and it was against Mackenzie Hughes, who I'm not even sure still wanted to be on the golf course, if I'm being frank. So I would be critical of that simply as a captain's pick. I'm not picking on Max on that front. But if I'm really going to give any, if I'm going to hand out an F, I guess it's going to be for Mike Weir. And it pains me because I'm not quite sure there's a kinder, nicer person on the face of the planet. But you and I could spend the next 20 minutes picking apart his decision, any decision, some of his picks, some of his decisions for pairings, the way the golf course was set up. There were so many things that he seemed to get wrong that it baffles me, because I had so much respect for him as a player, and he'd been an assistant captain for so long, and the captains that he had behind him seemed to have been in this position before. I'll go to Ernie Els as a really good example. He knows what he's doing. Jeff Ogilvy seems to know what he's doing, and yet Mike Weir whiffed on so many things.
Yeah, he certainly did. I'll get to him in a minute. Just to button up something you said, I have to give Max Homa his flowers. We spent basically a month saying that this guy is playing like trash. He has no business being on this U.S. President's Cup team. Rex, statistically, and I know you love strokes gained metrics, this week he was the third best player statistically, the best iron player for the U.S. team. He hooped one of the first hole that ended up.
Those stats don't apply to this event. We've already talked about this.
Never trailed in his match against Mac Hughes. He was saddled, Rex. Max Homa was, in his two foursomes matches with Brian Harman, who is the worst player on the golf course over these 4 days. Sure. Who knows what the result could have been for Max Homa, the way he was playing, the way Brian Harman was playing. That American duo did not stand much of a chance. I did just want to point that out. I thought Max Homa played much better, certainly, than he has played over the past couple of months. Tony Finau could not buy a putt. Brian Harman, as we mentioned, did not do much right. Sahith Theegala sat all day on Saturday, although you just have to love the enthusiasm and the attitude that he brings, the energy, certainly, that you would think that he would be, if not an automatic qualifier for that Ryder Cup team next year, certainly a high probability for a captain's pick for Keegan Bradley. On the international side, I'm with you. The only pass I would give Mike Weir, Rex, and look, Saturday was unprecedented. They lost 3-1 in the morning four balls, which should have been their stronger format. Sending the exact 8 out in the afternoon, and basically history repeating itself with another 3-1 session was clearly a mistake for Mike Weir. I think he would, with hindsight, as his guide, admit to that. But like, who else were you going to put in that spot? Minwoo Lee did not do much of anything. He lost a four balls match, did not see another session until Sunday. He ended up tying his match after the final result was already baked in. Christian Bezuidenhout, I was not a fan of picking him for the team. He did, I think, what was sort of expected, although he did go 2-1. He's just sort of unimpressive as a player. Like, if you're going to play him, he needs to be in the foursomes format. We did not necessarily see that. And look, heading into the week, there was a recipe for success for the internationals. You needed to rely heavily on your dogs. Those are Hideki Matsuyama, Sung Jae Im, and Adam Scott. Adam Scott, a 2-3 mark. Hideki Matsuyama, a 2-3 mark. A Sung Jae Im, a 1-4 record. That's just not going to get it done. It's no surprise to me that the international team lost when your three best players were all under 500 for the week.
Well, and he leaned into the Canadians, and for better, in this case, worse. And I think that was to be expected. I guess when you start, just go from the opening session on Thursday, you and I both were a little surprised if when he didn't open up the matches with a Canadian. I don't care which one of the Canadians he sent out. The whole idea was you needed to use the 12th man and the 13th man in this particular event. You need to get the crowd into it. And like, they complained, the crowd wasn't there on Thursday when they got swept. I don't think that's by coincidence, that it's because you hid the Canadians on the back end of that lineup. You didn't even play Mackenzie Hughes on day one. So I'm not quite sure that was the right way to go. I'm not even quite sure. It seems to me when it came to when he made those mistakes on Saturday, he just decided to stay with his same horses because he didn't have an alternative. Say it all the time. Everyone has a plan until you get punched in the mouth. He clearly didn't have an alternative.
Yeah, it was just very curious. And look, it's not like he had an abundance of options like Jim Furyk had with his captain's picks, right? Like, okay, if you don't take Mackenzie Hughes, you were going to take Nick Taylor, who won in Phoenix and has not done anything over the past 7 months. Okay, if you don't take Christian Bezuidenhout, who are you going to take?
Cam Davis.
Adam Hadwin or Cam Davis. Cam Davis won the Rocket Mortgage, did not do anything for the rest of the year, even though he was eighth in total points. Like, I think if you are whoever the captain in 2026 is going to be, Jeff Ogilvie, that makes a lot of sense. The Australian, been on a bunch of these teams. His design firm just did the redo of Medina, which is going to be hosting the President's Cup in 2026. I think you mostly hope that these players are going to be in better form when those matches come around, that you've won a handful of PGA Tour events, that you're not solely relying on a Hideki Matsuyama to sort of carry the load, which I think, as his record indicates, he was 7-10-5 career-wise heading into this. It only got worse after 2-3 mark this week at Royal Montreal. All right, Rex, what was your lasting memory of the week while we sign off here and start tappy-tapping on our keyboards to file these stores?
It's what could have been. And like, look, after day one, the air was taken out of this place. United States sweeps. It seems like we're heading in the same direction we have been in years, where you and I are sitting around Saturday talking about the U.S. team can close this out on Saturday. Nobody wants that. That's the worst case scenario. And now you fast forward 24 hours, and suddenly the international team does the same thing. The crowd shows up. The Mike Weir's players perform, finally. I have never felt the excitement, and I've covered this event since 2000, like I did on the course for the internationals. And I've certainly felt it for the U.S. team. But that, to me, felt like the first time in the history of this event that it was a home game and the international team responded. It gives you a glimpse of what could be and the possibilities of, if you do this right and if you take it to the right places and if you give the international captain all the tools they need, it could be a very, very special event. So that makes me even more aggravated that the PGA Tour seems insistent on keeping the status quo.
Yep. I'm with you. Some changes need to be made. We hope they'll be made in 2 years' time. I do think the President's Cup, Rex, always delivers. Like, there's always something every single day that's fun to write about, that's fun to talk about, whether it's the unprecedented sweep on Thursday, whether it was the putt in the dark by Patrick Cantlay on Saturday, whether it was the inspirational turnaround by the internationals on Friday, and then today, as I'll be writing for NBCSports.com/golf, the sweet redemption of Keegan Bradley to get to secure the winning point and look ahead to next year's Ryder Cup. It always delivers. It just could be a little bit better. Hopefully the PGA Tour will address this and make this a competition, because 13-1-1, as we mentioned off the top of this podcast, is not a competition. It is merely a coronation for the U.S. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Cannot thank you enough for listening in and tuning in each and every day. We've done these mini pods during the remainder of the President's Cup. Actually, Rex, the last mini pods of 2024, sad as it is, as shocking as it is, to finally admit it's been a long road, but it's certainly been one that we have thoroughly enjoyed. You guys know the drill. NBCSports.com/golf for all the latest news, notes, and updates. Rex and I will have stories up the website tonight. Report cards, follow stories for the next 2 days as well. All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys next week.
It can get a lot better.